Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today we're speaking with Mr. David Scott Duncan, a managing director at InnoSight, where he works with leaders to create customer-centric team strategies and organizations. He's also the author of The Secret Lives of Customers, a detective story about solving the mystery of customer behavior. Certainly sounds interesting. And Mr. Duncan, the first question I have for you today, and I really appreciate your joining us, The Secret Lives of Customers is written in a two-part format, I understand, the first being fictional. Why did you actually choose a fiction format? Let's start with that question today.
Yeah, I chose the fiction format because I thought it was particularly amenable both to the audience I was trying to reach as well as to the nature of the topic. The book aims to teach anyone working in any type of role in any kind of organization what they need to know to understand the customers that they're serving today or that they want to serve. And that's a pretty broad audience. And so I thought that having a fictional story that illustrates what I'm trying to teach through a narrative might be more appealing to a broader audience than a typical nonfiction business book. And there's also something about the topic, which is how do you have conversations that are useful with customers that elicit useful insights about them, that I think is particularly amenable to this format. If you've ever, you're obviously very experienced in doing interviews. If you've ever done interviews with customers, you often find that the most useful, insightful conversations are ones that have a bit of unpredictability to them, and to the outside observer, they might even seem a little bit random. And I wanted to depict via the narrative how those types of conversations look and how they feel, and then use the story to step back from them and analyze what happened to teach, you know, that there's really a method behind the madness that that anybody can learn.
Well, I think that's a great idea, and I know that you've certainly captured the attention of the audience with that twist to that. Now, the top message of your book is that in order to understand your customers, you need to think like a market detective. I like that. Can you explain what that means? Get into that a little bit from your perspective.
Sure. So I've done a lot of research into customers directly in my career, whether it's interviewing them or leading focus groups or observational research, all kinds of different techniques. And I've always been struck by a parallel between the nature of customer research and detective work. So if you think about what you do when you're trying to understand customers, you go out in the world, you have conversations, you make observation, you gather clues, you look for patterns, and you try to piece together pieces of the puzzle, just like a detective might. And so I used that analogy in the plot of the story that I wrote to make it more engaging. The story is actually written with some of the conventions of a fictional mystery detective story, and it illustrates how people can lead what I call market investigations and learn the skills of a market detective in the process.
Now, you also state that customers have jobs to be done and they hire companies. Can you give us some examples from that angle there?
Sure. One of the things to learn if you're aspiring to be a market detective is you need to learn a language for describing the things that you're trying to understand about customers. Like, there are lots of things that you might learn if you're having a conversation with somebody, but if you frame them as a customer, a potential customer, it means that you want to learn certain things about the problems they have or the goals they have so you can find ways to help them. And the language that the book teaches can be labeled jobs to be done. This is a concept that's been around for about 20 years. It comes out of marketing. And the basic notion is that what drives customer behavior is the existence of important, unsatisfied jobs that people want to get done. So it's not products themselves that cause us to buy them, but rather we're all going about living our lives. And as we do that, jobs pop up that we need to get done. Like a job can be a problem that you want to solve, something like repair my car or soothe my sore throat. or it can be a goal that you want to accomplish, like, you know, something like run a marathon or get into college. And it's these jobs that are the cause that motivate us to look out for products or services or experience to hire to perform those jobs. So we use jobs as a metaphor, just like you might hire a person to do a job like fixing a leaky pipe in your home or babysitting the kids. And because a job is the underlying why that motivates someone to seek out or embrace or reject a new solution, if you can discover what those jobs are, then the solutions you develop are more likely to be successful.
Certainly do appreciate the information shared so far today. We're speaking with author David Scott Duncan of The Secret Lives of Customers, a detective story about solving the mystery of customer behavior. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, working in conjunction with the Author Channel, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, how have things changed since the pandemic in the way we serve customers and meet their needs? I'm sure that's an interesting situation in the mix, if you will.
Sure. Well, I'd say some things have changed and some things have stayed the same. So what stayed the same is we all still have many of the same jobs to get done that we had before the pandemic. So for example, we all still, those who are fortunate enough to stay employed have jobs related to getting our work done. We still have jobs related to taking care of our health and educating our kids, for example. But a couple of things changed during the pandemic. There were suddenly all of these constraints and ways that we could satisfy those jobs, right? Since we were all many of us were stuck at home, we weren't able to travel for work or send our kids to school or even go to medical appointments to take care of our health. And so that changed during the height of the pandemic. Some of those constraints are being lifted as we start to see a path back to normal life that we're all going through now. But one of the other things that changed is that it forced people to try out new ways of solving those jobs that we might have been reluctant to try before, right? So instead of maybe traveling to work for a work meeting or traveling for a business trip, we all learned to use video conferencing tools and were, in some ways forced to try that out as a solution. And discovered that for many things that actually worked pretty well. Not for everything, certainly, but for many things it worked pretty well. Many of us tried out telemedicine solutions, remote appointments with our doctors over video or phone or over the internet. Another thing that maybe people would have been reluctant to try at the scale they were trying it out during the pandemic, and again, discovering that for some things, maybe that's even a better and more convenient solution. And it also forced the healthcare providers to offer that and health insurers to pay for it in a way they might have been reluctant to, again, at that scale prior to being forced to do so. And so, the pandemic, even though hopefully life is getting back to normal, I think because we all had to experiment with some new ways of satisfying some of the same jobs we had, some level of that behavior is likely to last even in the post-pandemic world.
Definitely some great points made right there. And I think with the pandemic and all that's happened, some things will never be the same. And I appreciate your input on that. Now, who in an organization or company would you think would benefit the most from this book beyond the sales and marketing teams?
Yeah, so I have a pretty broad definition of what a customer is, and it implies that everyone working in an organization has both has customers and is a customer. So I think of a customer as a person, a group, or an organization whose problems and goals you want to understand well enough that you can find ways to help them, help them to solve those problems or achieve those goals. And by that definition, literally everybody in an organization has customers, right? So the obvious people have to worry about the organization's customers, like people in sales and marketing and product development or innovation-related roles who are somehow touching the external customers. But even internal people who work in functions like HR or finance They also have customers in this sense, right? They have people in the organization whose problems and goals they want to help with. And even leaders have customers. They can think about their teams as being customers, right? Because they have problems or goals they might want to help with, and vice versa. You could think of your manager as your customer in the same sense. So it's really quite universal. And you know, if you accept that definition, then the first thing you need to know if you have customers is, well, what exactly from their perspective would be helpful? And my book aims to teach you how to learn exactly that.
Mr. Duncan, really appreciate your taking a moment to introduce your book to the audience, The Secret Lives of Customers, and some really interesting perspectives here, as well as insight shared on the program. Lastly, one of the key takeaways from the book is that organizations rely too much on market research and complicated data science to interpret customer behavior. In your opinion, what are some of the more practical methods that are missing today?
Sure. I'd say that the number one thing that the big data techniques overlook is the practice of just having a conversation with another human being, right? A one-on-one conversation. Either a current customer that you're trying to understand better or somebody that you might want to serve. And I refer to those one-on-one conversations as the atomic unit of market research techniques because, in my view, it's really the foundation for all other techniques. It's useful in just about 100% of any kind of business problems or scenarios you might have. It's always valuable to actually talk to people, and it's often the most valuable thing you can do, and it's the thing that you should do prior to using any kind of big data technique. Because if you don't first gather what I call small data, right, which is input from a small number of conversations, then you won't necessarily even know the right questions to ask with your big data inquiries. And so that's the most important thing I would say, and one of the key messages and things that the book teaches. Is how do you have those one-on-one conversations in a way that can make them useful?
Mr. Duncan, once again, we certainly appreciate your time and joining us here today and all the information shared, most helpful. If listeners wanted to pick up this book, The Secret Lives of Customers, or to be in touch with you, where's the best place to get further details online?
So there's more information at the book's website, which is marketdetective.com, and you can learn more about it, and also there are links to buy the book if people are interested.
And that certainly is easy enough. Again, folks, it is marketdetective.com. Mr. Duncan, all the best. Thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
You too, and thanks so much, Eric.
My pleasure. Anytime. We've been speaking with Mr. David Scott Duncan, the author of The Secret Lives of Customers, a detective story about solving the mystery of customer behavior. And for all the details, visit marketdetective.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.